Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole at TwinsTrivia.com, and I'd like to welcome you to another interview with a former Twin star of the past. Today, we have the pleasure and honor of speaking with former Twins catcher and coach, Hal Narragon. Hal Narragon started his organized baseball career in 1947 and made his major league debut in 1951 with the Cleveland Indians. Hal's baseball career took a detour in 1952 and 1953 as he served our country in the U.S. Marine Corps. After he was released from the service, he rejoined the Cleveland Indians and played for the Indians between 1954 and 1958. And then in May of 1959, Narragon was traded to the Washington Senators, where he played for the rest of 1959 and 1960. As you know, after the 1960 season, the Senators announced that they were moving to Minnesota, and Hal became a Minnesota Twin and played for them in 1961 and 1962. After he retired from baseball as an active player, he immediately moved into coaching with the Twins, where he coached between 1963 and 1966. Hal then moved on to coach with the Tigers in 1967 through 1969 before he hung up his spikes for the final time. So without further ado, let's talk to Hal. Hal, you were born in Zanesville, but you pretty much grew up in Barberton, Ohio, I believe. Can you tell us a little about what it was like to grow up there and what the city was like?
Well, I was born in Zanesville, Ohio, like you said, and then we moved to Barberton during the Second World War. My father was working at the Goodyear Aircraft, and we moved up to Barberton, and Barberton was a blue-collar town. And not so much today, but I think they had a population somewhere in 40,000 plus. It was a nice little town. In the center of the town, we have a lake, and it's a little bit this time of year. It's really beautiful, and unfortunately, I had some great coaches when I was in high school.
Yeah, and I understand you had a very nice high school sports career. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I played baseball, and actually, and that was my first love, and I did play basketball. We had great teams. Very fortunate at that time. There was a lot of great athletes that came through Barberton High School, and our baseball team. We did go to the state. We were in the Final Four, and. And then in basketball, we were in the Sweet 16, and we had some great players, good people, and one of them was Bo Schembechler, who became coach of Michigan.
Right, I read that on the internet when I was doing some research, and what sounded like he was a baseball player with you, too.
Well, he loved the game of baseball. He played first base. Bo was a right-hand hitter and a left-hand thrower, and he did a good job pitching for us. And Bo loved the game of baseball, and when he'd come home, when he was coaching, and he'd come home from wherever he was, at Miami or I forget the other ball club, other school. But when he was around in the summertime, I'd take him up to the games with me, and he followed my career when I was out in California. He came out there because he had a sister there, but he came down to see me. She lived up around L.A., and I was playing in San Diego. So Vaughn and I had a great relationship, and he just did a great job coaching at Michigan.
Well, he did. He had some great years there.
He certainly did. Sure.
After your junior year in high school, I believe, you apparently attended an open tryout that was put on by Bill Veeck of the Cleveland Indians, and you were offered a contract.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I was playing summer ball between my junior and senior year, and but they really said they wanted to sign me. And I wasn't supposed to be there. So I told them that I'd have to talk to with my dad. Well, my dad didn't know I went out, but when I came home, of course, I told him the story, and the end invited me back the next day with my dad, and they talked the situation over. So I really wasn't that excited about going back, but my dad said that we'd have to go back and apologize. And when we got to Cleveland, they took us up in the office, and Bill Veeck was there, and it was kind of strange that there was no door on Bill Veeck's office, and I learned later that he always wanted people to come in to see him.
Wow.
And we had Mr. Veeck and two scouts, and he said to, finally after some conversation, like, Mr. Veeck said to my dad, said, Mr. Ergon, we'd like to sign your son. And my dad said, well, I have to tell you that he's out of high school. And the reason he came to try out a camp, he wanted to see he had the potential to play professional baseball. And Veeck said he thought that was an excellent idea. But he said, we can't even talk to you about it, but I'd like to ask you if we would have an opportunity to sign your boy when he graduates from high school. And my dad said, well, handshake do. And Bill Veeck said, it will do, so they shook hands.
Wow.
And I left. And then after I graduated from high school, I did try out with Boston and Detroit Club. And a couple other offers, but I turned them down because I wanted to really play for Cleveland.
Okay, okay. And you ended up signing with them as a free agent, and you played in the minors with several teams through the 1951 season, I believe. And
right.
Then at
they refer to a free agent. I sort of signed as a free agent. That's what they call them now. But back then, see, they didn't have the draft.
Uh-huh. Right.
See, they didn't have a draft, and then these scouts, they would scout a ball player, and they didn't want the other scouts to know that they were interested, you know. And so I signed, and they sent me to Pittsfield, Massachusetts, in the Canadian American League. And then I played at Harrisburg, and then my first year I played at Harrisburg, they sent me down to Watertown, New York, in the Borderland, which is really a good break because I had a good manager down there named Fred Gerken. And Fred took a lot of interest in me and really helped me with my hitting. He pitched batting practice to me and gave me a lot of encouragement. And then the next year I went back to Harrisburg. That was in 49. And then I went to, I went to San Diego. I went to Oklahoma City in Texas League. And that was 1950. And then in 1951, I went to spring training with Cleveland. And they optioned me out to San Diego in 51. And then in September 51, they called me back to Cleveland, which I played in about three or four games. Then I was drafted into the Marine Corps.
When you got called up toward the end of that 51 season,
yes.
How did you find out that you were called up? What was that like?
Well, they told me in San Diego about the last series we were playing. We were playing in L.A. and. Well, I was thrilled. You know, I couldn't wait to get home, and I had my wife in San Diego, and we played in L.A. in our last game. Of course, and one of the pitchers, he happened to have his automobile there, so I went home I went back to San Diego with him and made it a little quicker. And then my wife and I drove to home here to Byron, and then I joined the club in Philadelphia. It was a great thrill.
Yeah, it sounded like it. And then you ended up making your major league debut, I believe, on September the 23rd. So you got
right.
Kind of got an anniversary coming up here.
Come on.
Before, too. You know,
I pitched for Lou Brissy. You remember a pitcher named Lou Brissy?
No, I don't.
Well, Lou Brissy was a great hero as far as I'm concerned during the Second World War. He was saw action and he had a leg that I'm not quite sure just the extent of the injury, but I do know that it didn't really bother him. He became a pitcher for the Philadelphia Athletics. In fact, he made the All-Star team. And then he was a left-hand pitcher, and then he came to Cleveland. And he relieved a lot. So he was a pitcher. He was ready to hit in Detroit. That's when I got my first base hit, too.
Yeah, do you remember that first at bat? I mean, I think you were facing Virgil Trucks.
Virgil Trucks was a pitcher, too.
Yeah.
I just walked up there. I remember Barney Mikowski was a left-hand hitter. He was former with Detroit, but he was clear that time. He was a good ball player, too. I remember he was just tell me to go up there and watch the ball and swing. That's what I did.
Makes sense. In your first at bat, you get a single. I think the left field is
right. Mm-hmm.
Is what I had looked up.
So you're right.
You ended up playing in I think two more games that year, and after that season, you went into the Marine Corps.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about your service time and what your feelings were of serving in the Marines just when your big league career was just starting to blossom.
Well, that's true, but there was a lot of other people in the same situation, and probably I was very fortunate, and I was in the Marine Corps. I was sent to Paris Island, which was a great experience, mm-hmm. in boot camp, and then the Marine Corps liked to entertain their troops a lot, so they actually took advantage of the athletes, not really taking advantage of them, but they give the athletes an opportunity to participate in their sports,
mm-hmm.
and so that's what happened. And so I was at Paris Island, and then I went to Quantico for 2 years. So I was very fortunate. And we had, there was a lot of people in the service at that time, too. Dick Grote, who came up with the Pirates.
Yeah, sure.
And we played against Dick and a couple, three times. And there was a lot of ball players in the service in the Marine Corps and the Army that was in the same situation that I was. We were just getting started, so more or less. But well, I was very fortunate. I was proud to serve in the Marine Corps. They were a good group.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you if you played ball in the service, but it sounds like you did get that opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
After,
you're right there.
After your time with the Marines was over and you were released, you ended up, I believe, playing some winter ball. And then in the spring of 54, you made the Indians team, and I think that was a team that won 111 games.
You're right. Well, what really, just to show you how fortunate one can be, in San Diego, we had a trainer. He was a trainer. He was a traveling secretary. He was about everything. And he told me, he said, you know, when you go to spring training with a big league club, go in shape. So I remember that. So I called Hank Greenberg, and he said, well, would you like to go to Panama? So my wife and I, we went to Panama, and I got to play winter ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to Cleveland in the spring training in 54, I was in like mid-season form. So I got a chance to catch a lot because I was always in shape. And so, you know, they say that first impression is a lasting impression.
Sure.
It worked for me. And fortunately enough, I was made the team with that 54 team. They had some terrific players and terrific people. And I was looking back on it, I didn't realize 19, maybe more.
Wow.
5 or 6. And the veterans were really great to us. They were a great group of people.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing team. I mean, Larry Doby was part of that group, and Rosen, and Bobby.
Well, we had, you're right, and we had Al Smith, and Larry Doby, and Dave Philly, and Wally Westlake, and then the infield we had Rosen, and we had George Strickland, Bobby Avila, we had Vic Wirtz. We also had Dale Mitchell, who was a great ball player for Cleveland. And then we had Jim Hegan catching, the best catcher I've ever seen.
Is that right?
I've seen a lot of them. I don't think anybody can catch like Jim Hegan. And then the pitching staff was great with Bob Lemon and Early Wynn and Mike Garcia, Bob Feller, Art Holloman. We also had in the bullpen Hal Newhouser, Bob Hooper, David Hoskin, and also two rookies, Ray Nalewski and Don Mossy. And then, of course, we had a good manager in Al Lopez, too.
Yeah. And that was going to be one of my questions. I mean, you had a chance to catch 4 future Hall of Famers.
Right. Uh-huh.
In Feller and Wynn and Newhouser and Lemon, that had to be a real treat too.
Right. Yeah. And there's so many good pitchers. Mike Garcia was a terrific pitcher, and I worked at Cleveland Club, and that was a great pitching staff.
I think I don't think it was 1954, but one of those years with Cleveland, you also got a chance to catch Herb Score.
Oh, yeah, well, 55. Herbie came up in 55.
What was it like to catch him? You know, everybody said
he had a tremendous fastball. He had a rising fastball. But also, he had a good curveball, really good curveball. He didn't always have the best control of it, but when he had his curveball working along with his fastball, he was unbeatable. He was really a nice person too. You'd like to have him for a son-in-law, so to speak.
Wow.
He's a very nice person.
You ended up, I think, playing for the Indians for several more seasons before you were traded to the Washington Senators in May of 1959. What did you think of the trade at the time?
I didn't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank Lane traded me, you know. And Joe Gordon was a manager, and he had told me earlier in the year that they said that you're going to be with this club. You know. Well, it was a big surprise when I was traded, but then Gordon told me that he didn't have. He argued for me, but it wasn't it. You know. But the thing is, it all worked out well, though. It usually does.
Well, Frank Lane,
pardon me?
Frank Lane made quite a few deals, I think.
He did. He did. Well, you know, Frank Lane, I really like Frank Lane, even though he traded me. I always like to tell this story that my daughter was in spring training. She was, I think, about 3 years old, and there was a dog. One of the players had a boxer dog. I can't remember the player's name, and she made over that dog. She really liked that dog. So Frank Lane, he took to my daughter, and he came in the clubhouse, and he told me, he says, "You go out and buy your daughter a dog and send me the bill." You know, and I said to him, "Mr. Lane, I said, I appreciate the offer, but I said, my wife didn't travel across country. She has her hands full, you know, with my daughter and a dog. I don't know what she can handle." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. When you think she's old enough to have a dog, you go out and buy her a dog and send me the bill."
I'll be darned.
So he traded me. So I did go out and I bought a dog for $100 approval. And I sent him a picture with the dog of my daughter.
Uh-huh.
And thanked him. And he wrote me a note
That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, he was, you know, some of the players didn't like him because, you know, of his trading. To me, you're going to be traded, you're going to be traded, that's it.
So
it all worked out well for me, though.
You were part of the Senators team when the organization announced they were going to move to Minnesota.
Yeah.
That was toward the end of 1960. What did you think of that move?
Oh, that was a great move. Well, I say completely different situation in Minnesota. Those people in Minnesota was very friendly, and they really took to the ball club, and they did everything for us. Helped us get up homes or apartments, living quarters, automobiles. They were great, and they came to the ballpark. And of course, they were a good baseball area, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and of course, St. Paul and Minneapolis. They were in the American Association, and it's a good baseball area. And my wife and I really enjoyed it up there. We still have, correspond with a couple of families up there.
That's pretty nice. It's a lot of years have gone by since you played here.
Oh, that's right.
You played at the Met in Met Stadium in 61 and 62. What did you think of the old Met?
That was a good ballpark. You know, when you're in the major leagues, I never complained about the clubhouse. Ballpark. I mean, this is what you work for and dream of, the major leagues.
Yep.
And it was the big leagues. And I tell you, it beat any minor league clubhouse or team I played for. So I thought it was fantastic.
You played for Minnesota in 61 and 62, and I think you were primarily serving as a backup to Earl Batty, who was a pretty good catcher in his own right.
He was outstanding. We had another catcher with us too that was he backed up early. It was Jerry Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry was an outstanding receiver. So, every club I was with was it seemed to have good catchers.
What are some of your fun memories of playing with the Minnesota Twins?
With the Twins?
Yeah.
Well, I developed Johnny Sain came to Minnesota in 1965. That's when we won the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot for the Twins. Pitching staff, he was ahead of his time as far as I was concerned. But the players we had, they were really down to earth players, and actually the players and family were close, and they always had a good time together. I could mention a lot of them, but I don't want to let anyone out.
Yeah.
There were so many nice guys. Of course, you know, we had Harmon Killebrew, who was in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And we just had an outstanding team. We had Killebrew, and we had Tony Oliva. Tony Oliva is one of the best all-around ball players I ever played with. And Jimmy Hall, who played center field for us, didn't get much attention, but he had a great year. And of course, had Zoilo Versailles is short, and Rich Rollins was at third, and we had Harmon Killebrew played first, backed up by Don Mincher. And then we had second base. We had Mike Quillacy and Jerry Kendall. And then our pitching staff. We had Camilo Pasquale, Jim Cott, Mudcat Grant, Mitch Stigman. Oh my goodness, I'm going to miss him. Al Worthington was a reliever who did an excellent job. And I remember when the Twins called me, and they were a chance to get Gary Bell or Mudcat Grant or Jim Perry from Cleveland.
Okay.
So they I knew all those fellas real well, caught them, and I didn't want to know which one to get, you know, and I went away. I said, why don't you just get all three of them? You know, well, I knew that wasn't possible. But I didn't really know how to rate them. But so I thought, well, gee, I'll just use the alphabet here. I told him, I said, well, I'd get Gary Bell, Mudcat Grant, and then Jim Perry. Well, we ended up getting Jim Grant and Jim Perry,
mm-hmm.
which was, well, they did. They had big years. Grant had his best year of his career. And I think Jim Perry came on to win 10 games or so. And we had Jim Merritt, Johnny Klipstein. They were a great blend. And we won 7 games. You know, Colfax beat Jim Cott in the 7th game.
Mm-hmm.
2-1, I think it was.
It's, so, yeah.
When you're in the World Series, you got to be good.
Absolutely.
You're one of the best.
And that's, yeah, it's, you know, you try so hard to get there, and so few teams make it, and, you know, it's really a privilege to get there, certainly.
Right. I mentioned John Saint, too. Sam Mealy was our manager, and I thought Sam deserved more credit than what he got. It's not easy managing any team, but when you're in contention, you know, everything is blown up, and I thought he did a good job.
When you're after the, I think the Twins released you after the 62 season, but they offered you a coaching job with the big club, and you served as a Twin coach from 63 to 66. What was it like to coach players that you had just played with for the most part?
Well, you know, I had no problem getting on with the players I played with because, you know, I know that everybody does things different. Mm-hmm. Like Earl Batty, we talked about catching, but we didn't talk about how he should do it. Well, how I did it, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do it your way and do the best you can. And when you have people in the major leagues, they're talented.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of people in the minor leagues who would like to take their place.
Yep.
They're very talented, and you have to respect them for that talent. And you may make a suggestion here and there that may help them. But I think most of all, it's the your attitude and the encouragement you give the players. You know, when players have a bad day, they got their head down. Like, if you can talk to them a little bit, even if you don't really have to talk about the game, but you talk to them, why? I think that it helps.
Yeah.
So I had no problem at all. I enjoyed it. I always enjoyed your company.
That's great. That's great. Well, you mentioned the 65 World Series team. What was it like to coach on that team? I mean, did you have to do a lot of coaching, or was it more just, you know, send the guys out and watch them play, and like you say, you know, offer the encouragement?
Well, you know, I think what happened when John Saint came, John had a program, and he'd like for the pitchers to throw a lot. Now, a lot of people take that wrong. They think that when you say throwing, they mean to your maximum, but he had a program that throw between starts, throw maybe medium speed and work on your pitches,
mm-hmm.
get the feel of the mound, and of course, some players are accustomed to, especially pitchers, they like to rest the day after they pitch. He kind of liked to see them toss after the day they pitch. Some managers would say, well, I don't like my pitchers to throw them the day before they pitch. Well, John, he'd like for them to toss the day before, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so our staff wouldn't with him in the bullpen too. So
sure.
We were a good team. And so here we are. Everything was clicking well. See, we had a good hitting club, and the pitchers did an outstanding job, and we won the American League pennant and got the 1-7 games with the Dodgers in the World Series. So it was a great year.
Yeah. Well, you were actually, and I think you may have mentioned it earlier, that you were Jim Kott's roommate at one point.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Jim came up, and we roomed together. He was, I think he joined us on the road, and I can't even remember the hotel in Washington we were staying at. I was staying at, but we had, it was kind of a two-bedroom deal. And he didn't have any place to go. I asked him to come and stay with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we formed a close relationship, and we still talk on the phone together. He was a very athletic gym, and he was a very positive person, and a very successful person.
Yeah, and he happened to be the first interview that I did for this website. And, you know, I really enjoyed talking with Jim. Jim was very, very nice, and he answered all my questions and, you know, just carried the conversation. I really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, Jim posited that I remember we had a manager who was suspended for, I don't know, 3 games or so. I can't remember, maybe 3 games that year, and I was supposed to be in charge, and Jim was pitching, and we're in Boston, and got along about the 7th inning, and I think we had about a 3-run lead, which isn't much in Boston, and he had pitched a good game, and he got a couple of guys on, and so I decided to take him out. Alan Worthington was a real good reliever. Back then, your reliever, you know, he came in on the 7th and pitched the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning.
Sure.
So I'm going to take Jim out, and I go to the mound, and I already waved Worthington to come in, and Jim said, though, he said, he looked at the hitter, and he said, well, look, and Earl Batty was standing there, and he said, well, I'll tell you what, he said, I think I can throw this ball, and I can throw a sinker in there, and he'll hit it on the ground, we'll get a double play and get out of the inning. Well, I said, well, Worthington's coming in. So he looked at Earl Batty, and he said, Earl, it seemed like my ball wasn't moving as much lately. But he wanted to stay in there, and I always, he was very positive about things. And he was the type of guy, this didn't happen very often as far as he did. He was a terrific pitcher, but if it happened, we'll say on Friday he was pitching, and we played doubleheaders on Sunday usually, and I always think about who's going to pitch the second game. If Jim happened to maybe leave the game, maybe they take him out on the 3rd or 4th inning. He'd come up to me and he'd say, "Do you have a pitcher for that second game on Sunday?" and he said, "You go tell him I want a pitch."
He obviously enjoyed his pitching, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was had exchanged emails with him just a couple of weeks ago, because I was on the website. I have a thing called Today in Twins History, and it was talking about when he ended up sliding into second base and getting injured.
Uh-huh.
And he ended up pitching several more innings with what turned out to be a broken wrist, broken bone in his wrist.
He's something else. He was a terrific announcer too.
Oh, he was great.
He was great.
You know, a couple of the players that interviewed have mentioned that, you know, they would like, if they had a choice of picking somebody to be the next baseball commissioner, they'd like it to be Jim Kott.
No, that would be a great choice.
Yeah, I think so.
He could handle it too.
Yeah. You know, mentioned. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned Johnny Sain a few times, and
yes.
He was the pitching coach in 65, and you and Johnny Sain seemed to be on the same wavelength a lot. But Johnny saying the pitcher seemed to love him, but he
You asked Jim Cott about Jones.
Yeah, he seemed to be really positive about it.
Oh, yeah. John was, of course, John was a great pitcher. And John encouraged his pitcher. He was very positive. And he could always pick out something good that the pitcher did, regardless of how bad the game went for the pitcher. John could always pick out something good. And he had the knack of when to approach the pitcher to make suggestions.
Okay.
And they always knew that John was in their corner regardless of what happened. And he could not only teach them how to improve their pitches. See, that's what his basic theory was, making the ball move, making it do something. And every great pitcher I caught always have good movement on the ball. They talk a lot about velocity today.
Mm-hmm.
The velocity is great, there's no doubt about it. But you have to have the ball moving. Because if you're going to pitch to a spot, so to speak, or to a location, and you throw that ball in there and it's not hitting that location, then you have nothing going for you. But if you throw it in there and it's moving, then you got more of a chance.
Yeah. So, and that makes sense.
So. Well, yes, it does. Every pitcher you look at, you probably have Maddox. You could watch him pitch and that ball wouldn't sink. And, Bob Lemon had a great sinker and a great breaking throw. Bob Phil had a rising fastball and a great curveball. Early wind hit pitches had sharp movement on them. That's what really gets the hitters out.
According to what I've read, the Twins asked Johnny Sain and yourself to resign following the 1966 season, and both of you ended up as coaches for the Tigers between 1967 and 1969.
Right.
In 68, the Tigers ended up winning it all, and Denny McClain won 31 games. What? Tell us about that team. What was so special about that team?
Well, you know, they had a lot of good ball players, and Detroit had they thought if they could get their pitching staff organized, they could win the pennant. So John and I went over there, and of course McClain was a good pitcher. He became a better pitcher. John sharpened up his breaking ball, Denny's breaking ball a little bit, and Mickey Lolich. We had Earl Wilson. Pat Dobson, John Hiller, and we had about three guys, rookie kids coming up, and we had that ball club was kind of they had a lot of fun on and off the field, but when they had fun on the field because they played well and they played together. A lot of those boys came up in the minor leagues together, and. They had a lot of fun. They always behaved themselves, but they always enjoyed each other. And they were a good group. Boy, you put them on the field and they could play. They'd find out a way to win.
Hmm.
We had the Al Kaline and Norm Cash, Jimmy Northrup, Mickey Stanley, Willie Horton, Bill Freehand was a catcher. Mickey Stanley playing, it was a great center fielder. He came in and played shortstop in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that? Millions of people want you to play a position you haven't played all year. And he did an excellent job.
Yeah, and I didn't get to follow the baseball quite as closely that year. That was one of the years I was in the Navy, and so I spent... Spent some time over in the Mediterranean there.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
So you didn't get to follow it quite as close.
Yeah.
I got to ask.
That was very popular. That team was very popular. I talked to people that, well, in fact, some gentleman called me not too long ago. He was 9 years old, and he had shaken hands and 3.5 hours when I meet him. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
And he did. He did.
That was pretty cool, though.
And what happened, he works in, I think, a large store. I can't remember the name. And after, the week after he was here, he was, I think he was in a photographic department, and he happened to turn around. Somebody asked him a question, so he turned around to answer the question, and it was Mickey Stanley.
God dropped his jaw there.
Oh, he did. And he sent me some pictures. In fact, he called me, but he sent me some pictures too. But he said, boy, what a week I was having. You know, he was just a Tiger fan. And,
yeah.
And that happens a lot as far as meeting people when you're in the Detroit area, of course. That they can tell you, well, I was in grade school or whatever, and I remember that team well. So they're a really popular group.
I got to ask you, I mean, how did Denny McClain manage to win 31 games that year? I mean, no one had won 30 games for years before that, and no one's done it since.
Mm-hmm. Well, Denny, John Sain's routine with pitching every fourth day. So they don't do that today.
Mm-hmm.
John felt that you mentally and physically you're ready to go every fourth day, and all those pitchers bought into that, and they stayed healthy, and they were good. They were good pitchers. And we had a good team, and everything just breaking. We got a lot of breaks. We won a lot of games from the seventh inning on. And so I know it. When you think, how can anyone win 31 games?
Yeah,
that was something.
That's pretty amazing. What do you think about pitch counts?
Pitch count?
Yeah.
I don't know. I told Rutherford once if they had pitch count when he played, he wouldn't have got by the third inning. Just kidding, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the real reason is, but I can't believe you put everything on everyone under the same umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some pitchers could throw 150 pitches. Maybe some pitchers can't throw. Maybe 90 pitches. But, you know, it used to be, and Jim Cott falls in this category, and several pitchers I caught, is you better get them early. Because if you don't get them early, you're not going to get them late.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just seem to get better. They may not have it the first few innings, but boy, they just keep grinding out, and they hit it, and they're tough to beat.
Yeah. You ended up walking away from baseball after the 69 season.
Mm-hmm.
How come?
Well, I always had it in the back of my mind about doing something else other than play the game. I really loved the game of baseball. I had to prove to myself that I could support my family. My daughter had one daughter, and other than play baseball or be associated with baseball. And that was a big reason.
Okay.
I just wanted to see, and I was very fortunate. I'll be married 62 years coming October.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. And I've had really a wonderful life.
You went into, I think, the sporting goods business after few years after you retired. How did that work for you?
Wonderful. Just great. We had the oldest and largest sporting goods store in Barberton. We also had the only sporting goods store in Barberton. That's what I tell people.
Yeah, that's great.
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the kids that would come in, an adult, that you had to work hard, but I liked it. I really enjoyed doing it.
Those things, you know, aren't all about luck. It's about hard work.
Yeah,
really is. I understand in doing some research the other day that the Barberton High School baseball field is named after you.
Right.
That's quite an honor.
Thank you. They took the baseball field to build a. The baseball field I played on, they put the school administration building on.
Okay.
It was a nice park, too. They moved the field not too far away then, and then I think it's about 5 years ago, they built a new high school where the baseball field used to be. And not too far from there, then they have a complex. And they have a softball field, two baseball fields, a soccer, all in this complex. So it's a nice, really a nice location.
Hmm.
And they have invitational every year in my name, and that, and I enjoy that too.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun thing to have, you know, inviting a bunch of different teams. And
right. Well, I always like to invite, after the first couple of years, I like to invite other people to throw out the first ball.
Oh.
We had a very successful basketball year a couple of years ago, and so I asked the coach, and he was a good athlete too, would you want to throw out the first ball? He jumped on it, and then he told me afterwards he was so nervous. and then last year we had the superintendent of the school. He's only been there, I think this is his second year. So I noticed that it was really was around the kids a lot. You know,
mm-hmm.
at basketball games, he would get out there at half court and shoot shots for the kids. You know.
Oh.
They seemed to like him, so I said to him, I said, would you like to go out the first ball? Oh, he said he'd be an honor. So I usually get down there about 15 minutes early, and then when I got there, he was there with his glove, and he said, come on, let's go warm up. I tell him, I only have one throw, and that's when you throw it to me, I throw it back to you. That's it.
Yeah. No, that's...
But he enjoyed it, and
seemed
to like it, so...
That's great. You played for a number of interesting managers during your career, such as Al Lopez and Kirby Farrell and Bobby Bragan and Joe Gordon, Cookie Lavaggetto, Sam Mealy. Who did you enjoy playing for the most, and why?
Well, I tell you what, there's no doubt about it. I think Al Lopez was kind of the best all-around manager, you know.
Okay.
He was... he'd let you play the game. And he used to say sometimes, let's play the game the way it should be played. Let's don't try to get too smart. And then he had very few meetings. In fact, he hardly had any meetings. he told me that when I first got Bob Lemon in the major leagues, he says, you go over to Lemon, go over the hitter. So I go over to Lemon, and I said, Lemon, Lopez says, go with ears and Lemon. He said, gee, I'm not that good. He said, you just get back there and call the pitches and we'll go from there. That was Lopez. He believed, and I agree with him, that every pitcher pitches hitters differently. So why have a big meeting? Just let the catchers and pitchers work it out.
Hmm.
And I like that. And in those meetings, a lot of times you get a lot of suggestions that aren't any good anyhow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let the pitcher and catcher work it out. So I like Lopez, and I enjoy playing to Joe Gordon. He made it fun. Joe was good, and Sam really was a nice, relaxed, tolerant manager. He would listen to you. He was... if you had any problems, why and talk about him. He had a great relationship with the players.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Bregan that was a type of player, well, with Cleveland, that was, to me, was an overmanaged type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Have a lot of things to let the players use their natural ability. And Kirby Farrell, unfortunately, probably shouldn't have been in the big leagues, really, because he was always never relaxed, just like his own pins and needles at times, though he was very successful in the minor leagues. And then Cookie Lavagetto, I really like Cookie Lavagetto, he had a lot of problems with the ball club. I mean, not personal problems, but they had a lot of players coming and going. And
sure.
Unfortunately, when he wasn't the manager, when these kids developed to really contribute, like, you know, the players we had in Washington, and he managed a little bit up in Minnesota. Well, that's where, you know, Bob Allison and Killebrew and Jimmy Hall and Eli Lowe and Rich Rollins, you know, they all came along with Will Batty, and
sure.
You know, we became a pennant winning club.
Yep. Yeah. And, it's all about timing.
That's right.
All about timing. What, if you had to pick out one baseball memory, what would you say is your favorite baseball memory? You were on the big leagues for quite a while, so that's kind of hard to do.
I remember in '54 we weren't going just too well. We're going on an Eastern road trip, and like I said, Lopez held very few meetings, and he did hold a meeting and just told us that. Take care of ourselves, you know, and let's play the game the way it should be played, and hustle, and we'll win this thing. And we were playing with Philadelphia, and we got into about the eighth inning, I believe, and they pitch hit for Jim Hegan. I didn't pitch him, they hit for Jim Hegan. I forget what it was, but the score was tied, I believe, one run down or something like that. And by the time I got up to plate, they had a left-hand pitcher, and I was a left-hand hitter. But we had a man on, see? And I think the score was tied, and I hit a triple.
Hmm.
And scored the winning run, and we won the game, and then we kind of got started again. That's what I kind of remember.
There was
other things too, you know.
Sure.
But Dale Mitchell was a very good friend of mine. He was a great hitter. He helped me tremendously. And I roomed with Dale Mitchell, which he asked me if I'd like to room with him. Well, you know, I was growing up here in Broward, and he was a big star in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And we formed a great relationship.
That's great. If you were a scout today, Hal, and you saw young Hal Maragon playing, how would you describe him as a baseball player?
Well, I would like to think that if he were a catcher, so to speak,
uh-huh.
Okay, I would like to see him really hustle down to first base and back up the plays. I would like to see if the ball got by him, and whether it's 2 feet away or 4 feet or 2 yards or whatever, run and get the ball and throw it to the pitcher or give it to the umpire. Just don't let somebody else do it.
Okay.
I like to see a catcher. I don't believe that I would teach anyone to try to catch like I. I may make suggestion and let it work out. He can work that into his way of catching because everyone's different. But I like to see the catcher be aggressive. You know, you can always tell him on two outs. You can tell you don't have to make a lot of noise. He can watch when the runners run around the bases. You know, everybody else watching the play, he can watch first base. It's amazing how many times they miss first base.
Hmm.
And you can watch those bases. And if you just get one a year, it may be the Columbus was the one who won the game for that year.
Absolutely. Yeah. One game makes a huge difference.
But those little things that you won't see in the paper, you know, they put the batting averages and the fielding average, but it's the guy that knows how to play the game. I think that's really important, not only for the catcher, but I think today's ball players, who I think are multi-talented, but some of the plays, base running and not throwing to the correct bases.
Yeah.
I hear the announcers, I hear them say, basically with Cleveland, they got young players. I say, well, they're just young kids. Well, how many games do you have to play, or how many years do you have to play to learn how to run the bases?
Yeah.
Or go to the right base.
And that's, to me, that's one of the fun things about going to a baseball game versus watching a baseball game on TV, is because the TV is focused on the ball and the pitch or the hitter,
right.
And you don't get to see what all the other players are doing on a play on television, whereas at the ballpark you get to see the different fielders, you know, positioning themselves to be back up in different places and whatnot.
That's right. It's important.
Yeah.
I like to. I think if you know how to play the game, then I think you can perform better. Just, you know, it's got to be automatic to you.
Yeah, I think you're right. Do you follow baseball today, Hal?
I follow it. I'm in the. I like to watch the scores, the box scores,
mm-hmm.
and I the standings. And of course, I follow Cleveland. I like to follow. I follow Cleveland because I like the game. They're not doing very well this year, but I'm really rooting hard for the Twins. I think I like the way they play the game. They grind it out when they have to, and they make a good defensive team. And I think they have an excellent manager. Anybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
But I think he's probably. If I had to pick a manager today, I think I'd pick him.
Well,
I like him. I like Jim Leland at Detroit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think about Jim Thome and what he's doing here?
Isn't that fantastic? My goodness.
It is amazing. And, you know, everything you hear about him is that he's such a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. And he keeps himself in shape.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he doesn't play in the field, and I'm against that. I like to see ball players and be fielders and hitters, but that's not the way it is. It gives him an opportunity to play the game, or stay in the game more. But he has a great attitude.
He does.
That's a lot of players don't realize about the attitude, because. That's like Jim Cott. You know, Jim Cott was—he can go to any ball club, and he's got a great attitude, and he gets along with people. He wants to help people,
yeah.
And I assume that Tommy's the same way.
Yeah. I understand you like to golf. How does playing baseball compare to playing golf for you?
Well, I play golf right-handed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And golf, I really enjoy golf. I'm the Major League alumni, they started this providing players for charity purposes,
mm-hmm.
Raise money for Heart Association or cancer or the Little League. I get invited over to Williamsport. I think I've went over 20 years now. I'm playing their golf outing. They raise money for the Little League. And it's really nice because I meet ball players that I've read about, and I met ball players I played against, and I met Mm-hmm. It's really been nice. I don't play very well nowadays, but I still play, and I enjoy it.
Yeah. I still play too, and I never was very good. But it's a fun game, and you get to be outside. I think that's, for me, that's the best part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, my wife plays. My wife, she plays too. And we walk. We walk. We used to walk 18.
Wow.
We still walk 9. And once in a while, we'll walk 18. It just depends how we feel.
That's hard.
And
that's hard.
So that's how we keep it in shape.
Hale, I thank you so much for your time today, and I'd like to ask you one final question.
No problem.
Do you have anything you'd like to say to your fans back here in Minnesota?
Well, I'd like to wish them well and let all the people know how much I appreciate their friendliness when I was up there, and they sure are wonderful people. And they did a lot for my family when I was there, so I thank them for that.
Well, thank you for your time today.
Well, I thank you for calling.